Mr. Chris Brezzi, it's good
Hello
to
there,
see
John.
You.
It is good
it's
to see
been
you
a
too.
Long, long time, way too long.
Yeah, it absolutely has.
Anyway, so I knew you. You were an early employee of Aperio, and that's where we met. But I never got the backstory of Chris Brezzi. Like, how did you end up at Aperio? How did you end up in consulting and into the cloud world?
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. So I started off in a chemical company doing IT work. It was around the time of like initial days of e-commerce and, you know, putting stuff out on the internet. And I kind of realized that, you know, technology at a chemical company is never going to be their number one priority. So I was, you know, looking for other opportunities out there. And there's this consultant that I worked with at this company. His name is JT Lovell. And
oh,
he was probably one of the best consultants I've ever worked with. And I just, a ton of respect for that guy.
Yeah.
And he told me about this new company. There's like maybe a few people and, you know, would be interested in joining. And I talked to some folks and it's like, boy, this is really early stage. I don't know, maybe a little risky. Yeah. I don't know. But talked to them for a while and then ended up joining Aperio. And I hadn't done consulting before, just had done internal IT work.
Right.
But got a chance to work. What was really cool about that, you're working with a customer in one industry one day. I was working with a book publisher, you know, for the right. One engagement. And then next thing you know, you're in higher ed. And that's where we're working together on a project.
Yes.
And so that's how I got into consulting. And then at Aperio, we started to focus on tech enabling our consultants. And so we started to build some products there. And I got into product management and building there. And since then, I've been focused on doing cloud-based product builds.
Yeah. So a couple things there. JT was a fantastic consultant. He still is.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Yes. He's alive.
But you couldn't miss him. He was so tall. And I don't know if he had a mohawk when you first met him, but yeah, he had a high mohawk. He was off wearing high boots. So and just a lovely, lovely guy. And so smart. Second of all, about products, it was interesting. I met a client recently. I'm still in consulting, and they have CMC.
And I really? It's still alive?
It's still alive. So, and I know you're integral in that. And I remember those days. I wanted to talk to you about products at a consulting firm, because when Aperio first was formed, you know, at least when I joined, the idea was we're going to be products and services. Yep. It was kind of a weird relationship and working that out. And my conclusion was it's really hard to be both. So what did you learn in those days of being part of a product, basically a services company that was coming up with products? Yeah.
It was hard. I think that when you are doing product in a services company, the appetite for continued investment into a product is a little bit less than if you are just a product company totally focused on that. And what that sometimes causes is, you know, maybe you move away from something a little bit too early, you know, without putting more money, because basically you are affecting the profitability of your services business by investing in product. And they're right. Two different business models. When I went to Traction on Demand, and I think it was worked out a little bit differently there, where there was more of a separation, but there still was a little bit of tension between those two business models, which is, you know, kind of, it's been exciting if you're kind of following the latest journey here, but with Salesforce acquiring the Traction on Demand services business, the product-focused business has now kind of created its own company called Uncommon Purpose, and that's totally focused on product. So there's like this kind of freedom, and it's nice to be able to just focus on product development.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. And I saw you were at Uncommon Purpose, and I was like, what the hell is that? And I saw the products were Traction products, so I kind of deduced that's what happened. So, could you tell me about Uncommon Purpose? What's it like? And
first off, it's only been in existence for a few weeks here, so I can speak to what it's been, but it's been amazing
history there.
Yes, but yeah, we're counting our tenure from back at Traction on Demand too. But
yeah,
yeah. So when Salesforce announced the acquisition, it was just the services business and the people moved over there that are working in services. But all the IP, the products, the accelerators, all that technology was something that they didn't acquire, and then we formed our company from. And we kind of thought about this, like Traction on Demand, you know, wasn't really the parent company before. We always had these separate product companies that you might, I don't know how much you know about the portfolio, but like some of them, like Traction Guest has been, you know, kind of spun out from Traction on Demand. It has since been acquired by another company. We've got other products that have been around for a few years. There's different levels of maturity of these products. And they were operating, you know, not like under the services kind of direction. They were actually operating as separate entities in before. So we're kind of calling it what it is. And Uncommon Purpose is like the parent company of all these other product companies.
Yeah.
And the kind of the whole point of Uncommon Purpose is to take ideas and turn them into, you know, business solutions, typically products. And we build these new companies around really smart, great people.
Okay. So it's going to be a parent of some companies on Common Purpose?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand.
So right now we have about 5 to 6 products in Uncommon Purpose. And each of those companies' intention is, you know, as they become successful, as they become, you know, sticky out there in the market, they will become their own companies and spin out.
Wow. It's a fantastic name, by the way, but I saw the website, it says logo here. So it's that too, right?
We're not sure if that's our new logo or if we're actually going to be getting a new logo. So it's a little mystery around that right now.
I kind of like it just being new logo here, right? That's kind of...
Would you put that on a shirt? Like that's the whole, you know, you got to judge how much you like
it. It's so meta in a way, right? It's
just
kinda, I really enjoy it. So are all these products... built on the Salesforce platform?
No, they're not. And some of them are, just like AppExchange package products that you would be used to. But some of these products are actually focused on the Salesforce market, like the ecosystem, but they might be built off platform and other technologies. Like the one product that I'm overseeing is called X-Ray, and that's off the Salesforce platform, but it analyzes Salesforce metadata. So there's a tie in there. But yeah, there's no strict, it's got to be on Salesforce as part of our mandate or anything.
Oh, that's good. So it gives you some freedom, right? To think outside of the Salesforce box.
Yes. Problem comes first, solution comes
right. And are these products on the AppExchange or is it as needed basis or?
Many of them are, but like, as I said, like they're different like levels of maturity. So depending on how far along they are, they get publish on the AppExchange, and some might be downloadable, some might be a contact us type of AppExchange listing.
Right. And managed packages versus unmanaged packages, they all managed.
We're going to get technical, aren't we? So most of them are, they're all managed when they become a product out there. Some of them are second gen managed packages, which a lot of new cool features in there if you read up on that. But yeah, usually like in Traction on Demand, we would have unlocked or unmanaged packages when they were accelerators, something that you would extend and transform and turn to something else, but the products need to stay stable.
Right. So when these products get used, are they, do you see them? And maybe there's so many products, it's hard to generalize, but are they plug and play or do they need an implementation partner or someone technical to get them going?
I think it definitely depends on the customer and also the product. Some of them are more complex, like Traction Rec. It's basically like CRM for community centers. There could be some implementation services involved getting that set up right. You got to ask a lot of business questions to make sure that you're configuring it properly. Other products are more plug and play. Like X-Ray is going to be more of a, you know, you authorize against your org, it scans it, and you know you're off and running. There's not a lot of implementation services required there.
Right. And for someone who's listening to this, who's thinking about careers, what's the difference really between, you know, being a technical engineer for a product company like Uncommon Purpose versus being an implementation consultant, you know, as a consultant for services?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because some people are definitely better suited for one or the other. So with consulting services, you know, you are usually energized about a new challenge, you know, learning a new industry, learning a new customer, going deep, building something, and then walking away and doing the next one. And that there's a lot of like a lot of learning happening there, obviously, and you're able to add value to folks that weren't able to do that on their own before. And that's really rewarding. But you don't get to see what happens to that thing when you leave. And does it survive? Does it like crumble and die? Does it evolve into something else? And so the folks that want to kind of see that product through its life cycle, see it mature, add new features. Oh, I want to go fix that thing that I know we had to cut a corner because of the time constraints. Like those kind of people really focused on quality and, you know, that consistent user experience, they end up, I think, really getting a lot out of product work. You're on mute, my friend.
I am on mute, but when I, because I have a coughing fit, I had COVID a few weeks ago. And then,
oh, dang.
Yeah. I'm much better now. I just have this cough. So when I was at Aperio, I didn't work directly for products, although I helped implement the Professional Services Enterprise, PSE.
When it first started. I thought you were on that Professional Services Enterprise.
Yeah. The one thing I started to appreciate is like how much support a product requires, because when it's out in the field, how easy it is to break it, right? It just seems like there's so much maintenance. So CMC
might just be the product you're working on, John. I don't know if I can attribute it to the developer.
You're schlocking it out there. But for CMC, the Cloud Management Center, that was a big part of your effort, wasn't it? Was that what did you learn from managing that product? How did that get your career going?
Well, I think it was the excitement of starting with something that added value, but then just extending it and kind of filling in all the little crevices and gaps where people have identified, you can really make my life a lot easier by just adding this one little thing over here. That's also pretty dangerous, by the way, too. And I think that's how like Microsoft's toolbars have turned into like a circus of a million features and possibilities where you got to be careful about that. But I think what was cool about that is you get to like, you know, building a product within a consulting services company, you're getting kind of like free user feedback from a wide variety of folks, different roles in the company, but also the customers' roles. And they're looking at this with new eyes every time you start using that with them. So that's really valuable. And sometimes it's really hard for a product team to get user feedback directly, you know, right from their contingent. So
that's really interesting. And as far as what CMC did, it was basically everything to run a cloud project. And Aperio were the main users of it, the consultants, but also our clients. And obviously some clients are still using it.
Yeah, crazy.
it was ahead of its time in a lot of ways, as far as like manifest items, so understanding like what you need to migrate to production and things like that. So do you still use things like that, or is there another tool that you use?
It's funny you ask, because when I came to Traction on Demand, one of the reasons that I was talking to those guys is they were looking to scale, and they had a solution. It's called Traction Enable, that kind of did some of the status reporting, the transparency action items with your customers, but they didn't have the requirements. So one of the things that I was able to focus on with a great team there was building out a whole like work management solution within there. And one of the things with CMC that I'm kind of smiling because Chris Bardwin was the CEO of Aperio. He always said, you got to make this thing sexy. Like, why does this look like Salesforce? Like, and so when we were building Traction Enable, like the technical possibilities with the Lightning Design System have enabled us to be sexier. Not me personally, you know, but like with the technology. And there's some really awesome efficiencies that we were able to add to work management in Traction Enable. So I think every company either ends up using a Jira or building some type of object model to store requirements. Yeah. But if you don't make it really easy to get them in and share that with your customer, like it doesn't get adopted. And then you've just lost the value of putting any effort on that.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, those were fun days.
Absolutely.
So, and I just remember JT left when Aperio sold PSE to Financial Force, right? They bought JT and a few other people as well.
I don't remember if did he definitely go there? I couldn't remember if he went with that.
He's still alive. We could contact him. So
yeah, we definitely should. I actually was just, I chatted with him on LinkedIn a little bit ago, and he's definitely doing great.
Beautiful. So now that you've spun off of Traction, does it feel any different? Or does it feel like a startup, or does it feel like Traction?
Yeah, it's super interesting because it is definitely a startup in the sense that we just started. But what other startup has like 150 people and like 5 or 6 products already kind of in flight, you know, at some stage? Like, so it's weird because you're having to, you know, buy systems, you know, like you're getting started and you're buying and you're implementing processes, but you got a crew of folks that have already been working together. And, right. You know, you're able to become efficient a lot quicker, but there's still some of that newness too, with everything, of course.
Right. Right. So how do you, market these products? Are you privy to that? Like how they get it to market?
And I'm privy to it. Yeah.
You are privy.
I'll let you in on the secret. Don't tell anybody, John, but what we do. So right now, a lot of the products that we currently have, as you could probably imagine, like they are, they helped Traction on Demand scale. Yeah. And therefore, the market that we're looking at is Salesforce consulting partners, because we are going to take that secret sauce that we got Traction and scale from 500 to 1500, or actually before 500, before my time, of course, and bring it out to the market. So we think that the offerings we have can help other partners out there that just, you know, they're maybe having trouble getting to that next level of growth. And that's where we'll start. But there's also like, there's so many ideas that we've had like in the kind of back pocket, like, oh, if only we had time or investment or whatever, that we kind of have in the hopper too. So probably over time, that market is going to expand, but that's a primary one that we're focused on right now.
Right, right. It must be, first of all, that's an amazing advantage starting a startup with 150 people and products already, right? it must be a hard decision on, do you go deeper on the products you have or expand to a new product? How is that decision made?
It's definitely one that has to be experimented with. So basically everywhere along the way, we've got to get customer feedback and get that product market fit validated before we invest more. And I think that's what I really love about Uncommon Purpose versus joining a startup with one product, is you got your bet on like one product and that thing doesn't take off, like the thing crumbles, like you got to start over, people lose their jobs. Uncommon Purpose, like there's a bunch of different product ideas, and if one maybe doesn't make it to the next stage, well then let's take that team of talented folks and point them at another new idea and let's go validate that product market fit instead. And so there's more bets that you can take in that model.
Yeah. And I imagine having products already in the market, you already have revenue coming in. So there's not that panic of that long period where you're developing the product where you're making it all cost. Right.
That's right. That's the nerve wracking part. Yes.
We talked about pharmaceuticals, like developing a drug, right? All that time, then you have to make up for it. And then if it fizzles, you're a goner. So I imagine you're hiring. What kind of people are you looking for these days?
Yeah, I think the top one is always user experience, you know, UI designer folks, because you can kind of think about like what we're doing. We're trying to like validate product ideas, and we need folks to help do market research and design, you know, mockups and just prove these things. But then also as the product is maturing, making sure that we keep that focus on it going forward. So that's a big one. But there is actually, there's a number of different opportunities depending on the product, customer success, developers, all across the board related to product.
Yeah. And are you allowed to say, or do you have consulting partners now that help implement these products? Or are you looking for some? Or
I would always, if anyone's interested, contact us. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think right now, you know, like I said, some products that have been out there for a while, you know, they've had consulting partners help them implement their solutions, or they have their own services arms themselves. But, you know, as these things grow, I think there's always a potential need there. So, reach out.
Yeah. I mean, I always talk to people with small firms, right? There's so many out there, and it seems like, I don't know, it would be a great opportunity for a small firm to learn these products and help implement them. And then, you know, you become that trusted advisor between Uncommon Purpose and the customer, right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And it's this virtuous circle of making the customer successful and then making everyone else successful. So
virtuous cycle always comes back. It's, I, you know, you can't get rid of
it's it. I always like my circles to be virtuous. I mean, I'll come out and say it. I don't care who knows it. So who's the CEO of, and I looked at Uncommon Purpose. There's no like leadership thing yet. Oh. So you're probably still building that.
We're all leaders, John.
Yeah, we look yes, it, it's like a communist collective.
Well, I don't know if I go that far, but
okay.
Neil Patil is our CEO. He was the president of products over at Traction on Demand.
Oh,
and Greg Malpass, who was the CEO at Traction on Demand, he is a leader on our board as well. So he's still involved in that sense. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, anyway, I hope you're enjoying yourself.
Always am. Always
You've
am.
Come a long way in your journey.
Hey, so have you. You're like a podcast star now, man. I'm waiting for the next release every time, you know, you put a new one out. I'm like, who's he going to get?
This is just, I mean, basically it's kind of out of work. I was out of work right before COVID hit. Right. Which is not a great time to be.
That's
out
a tough
of work.
Time. Yeah. Right.
And I was interviewing with all these firms, right? All the usual suspects, Traction included. And to me, it was super inspiring, right? Because for all these firms, I loved hearing their story and they were all doing exciting things. And the leadership, like Greg Malpass and were always really interesting, right? And it's just they're inspiring. The ecosystem is filled with inspiring people and inspiring stories. And then eventually I found my way to Atrium, which, you know, quite a few people there.
Absolutely. It's a great company.
And I've been enjoying it. But it was like, man, I really miss talking to all those people, you know, in the ecosystem and hearing the stories and getting ideas. And I've been consulting my whole career. So it was just like, I'm just going to start a podcast. So it's one of those things that I dedicated myself to doing at least for a year. And it's starting to get, it's starting to get a lot of work, right? Like,
didn't realize.
Like that one time, I'm a big White Sox baseball fan, and they, it was the opening day, and I just, on a joke, I wrote a haiku about the game. And then I said, I'm going to write a haiku after every single White Sox baseball game. And I don't know how into baseball you are, but there are 162 games.
Yeah, that's a commitment.
So by about this time of year, like by May, I'm like, oh my God, I have so many more to go. But it was a good experience.
You got to reassess your goals sometimes. But, you know, one thing I love about this is I feel like, and I feel kind of guilty actually a little bit, because I feel like I'm eavesdropping on your telephone conversation with somebody. But I love it because I don't get to talk to all these folks all the time. So it gives me a chance to get some inspiration and learn what's going on in everybody's lives.
And it's not meant to be an Aperio reunion, but it's just, to me, it's such an interesting story what Aperio did and what has come out of it, right? I've talked about it with other people. It's like this tree that had all these acorns all over, and now you see all these sprouts. And Traction was highly influenced by Aperio. And I see that at Atrium as well, right? And we don't talk about Aperio internally because we don't want to be Aperio 2.0. But also, not all our employees went to Aperio, and we don't want it to be cliquish, right? So how did Traction handle that?
Yeah, actually, it was interesting. Like, the culture is definitely different between Aperio and Traction. I think both of them are amazing culture, very people-focused companies. But, you know, the way I look at it is it's less that you're creating like an Aperio 2.0, but the people that were at Aperio, just super talented, everybody's an A player, you know, so you just want to work with those people again. And they start to kind of collect in different, you know, pockets in the industry. But it doesn't mean that the apparel culture necessarily, but it's just that talent is just it's amazing. Like I love working with folks from apparel. They're all high caliber folks.
Yeah. Chris Barman, one of his biggest assets was his ability to hire people, you know, and some of those early hires, my God, you know, they're like an all-star team of the industry, really. Yeah. And I don't think I was on the all-star team, but I was on a, I don't know. I was good off the bench, right? That's what they say.
I'm pretty sure you're on the team though, John.
Sorry. Well, thank you, sir. Well, Chris, so what do you do when you're not working these days?
Dude, I'm a chauffeur. I don't know if you call it professional chauffeuring, but I have three kids. So there's a lot of activities from marching band to dance to mountain biking to robotics competitions. Did you know that robotics competitions are like a sport that you there? It's a pretty big thing. I've been going to a few of those recently and definitely worth a view. Probably can catch that out on YouTube somewhere.
It seems like a nerdy sport. No offense. Like it's not like ultimate fighting, right? But it's probably a lot safer and more lucrative in the end.
I think you're right with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Once your kids reach a certain age, you do become a chauffeur.
Yeah.
And
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me. It was great. I don't know when the last time we spoke was like years. We shouldn't make it every 10 years. We should make it every like quarter.
Yeah, we don't even have to record it. We can actually just talk.
We could talk without recording it and putting it on the internet. That's also an option.
It's not really normal to do that anymore, but we can still do that.
Absolutely. All right, Chris. Thank you so much. And best of luck to all of you at Uncommon Purpose. I'll be cheering for you guys.
Oh, thank you, John. And thanks for having me on.
All right. Take care, sir.
All right. See you, man. Bye.